right, let's get the Swapcast started here, shall we? All right. Come on up, guys. Here comes George from MMA Junkie. Demetrius Johnson, the flyweight champion of the world, is here. Here comes Adam Hunter from MMA Roasted. Get this thing out of the way. Oh, we are going to confuse the sound man. Oh, hold on. Hold on. I think we're good. Okay, we got, actually, this is a seating order. We're good. Everybody, let's move up, shall we? Let's move up a little bit. I had this all staged better last time, but we didn't have anybody making their stand-up debut. So, okay, well, listen, before we get to topics of the day, how do you feel?
Not too bad. A little bit of a mental blunder there in the middle, but I think I relied on the friendliness of the crowd to go ahead and let me get away with it. I think that I have an unfair advantage. I'm almost like the CM Punk now of comedy.
Oh, now.
Where I'm given a little bit of leeway, whereas a lot of guys like Richard and stuff, or yourself, that starting off, you know, have to grind it out, and there's going to be no mercy.
Yeah, give yourself a little more credit than that. All right, Adam, your professional critique here.
I thought Frank did great, honestly. I thought he was great. I was very, very impressed. I've seen so many comics do their first show ever, and for a first show, that was unbelievable. It was very personal. You actually made everything about you. You didn't like try to do these crazy observations. It was all stuff that only Frank Mir can talk about. And I thought that was really amazing. It showed how much you love your wife and your kids. It was great. I was very, very impressed. You went from joke to joke to joke. You didn't sweat, and I thought you did a great job.
Thanks, man.
So basically, he stayed away from everything that you hate about my set, because I think the critique you gave me was, I think that was everything you hated. You guys know George from MMA Junkie. He kicked it off, and Demetrius Johnson, of course, Mighty Mouse is here. How you doing, Mighty Mouse? I just saw today that you will be working on the night of December the 3rd.
That is correct.
That's how you fighters do it. You have like 3 days a year you work.
Yeah, it's a great gig. It's a very great gig. It pays the bills, and I'm looking forward to December 3rd.
Yeah. Now, you and it's no coincidence that we got Mighty Mouse on the show tonight, because Frank and Demetrius have embarked on this very unlikely friendship. I'm not sure who gets stranger looks when Frank brings his friends out, when he's hanging out with me or when he's hanging out with Demetrius. Because me, they just assume I'm Frank's dealer. But with Demetrius... With Demetrius, they're just struck by the, you know, the visual disproportion or whatever. I like to imagine them as like an unlikely crime-fighting duo that, you know, whenever it's like Scooby-Doo scenarios, they have to get through a locked door, so Frank lifts Demetrius up and he goes through the air duct and comes out on the other side, you know, but then they need speed advantage. That's where Demetrius comes in. How did you guys meet originally?
We've actually worked on a couple of things together. We worked on the Harley-Davidson shoot before.
That's right.
And we also did a ice skating rink above, what was that, the Cosmo, I believe it was? The Cosmo, I believe it was. The wives hit it off, and then me and my wife went out to Mexico, Cabo.
Oh, yeah,
Cabo. Right. Was good. We met some of their good friends, Elaine and Ray, and then saw Frank Mir, and he likes beer, I like beer, wives get along. I mean, you can't, you know, I know
that's
sometimes.
The point. Yeah. That's, what are you saying right there? That's the most important aspect of it. If our wives didn't get along, we wouldn't get to talk.
Yeah, I'm like, all right, Frank, hey, man, it's good to see you, man. You know, the wife, you know, that put my foot down, ain't going to work today, so I got to go with her.
Yeah, apparently there's been some bad experiences in the Mirror catalog, because I got that same talk. When we all hung out the first time, did the couples thing, and I brought my girlfriend, and Frank was like, oh, my God, whoo, what a relief. They're friends. Look at them. Look at them. They're getting along like they've known each other their whole lives. Oh, trust me, it doesn't always go that way. That was good. So when you guys, let's check this out, guys. You know, you maybe everybody has those stories about, you know, what a small world it is, and you can't believe you ran into somebody in the most unlikely places. He just mentioned this Cabo trip. So I'm home one weekend. It wasn't that long ago, I don't think.
No, it was actually for my birthday.
Back in May.
And they're actually here.
Yeah. See, that's what best friends do. They know each other's birthdays. Oh, yes, in May.
Yeah, it was May.
Yeah.
And they actually was just right after some bad news I had gotten, and so I didn't want to leave the house, and they insisted on me going out there. So
you might have read the blogs.
Yeah, so we were down there in Cabo.
Yeah, so there, and I knew he was down there because we weren't taping the podcast for a few days and everything. And Demetrius, you text me and you say, "Hey, can you shoot me Frank's number?" And I said, "Yeah." I said, "He's in Mexico though, so I don't know if the phone's working down there. I may not get to you for a few days." And he goes, "No, I'm in Mexico. I just ran into him on the beach, and I need to text him from one end of the beach to the other. That's very random."
Try and stay connected.
You would run into each other. Adam, what did you think of the UFC 202 press conference yesterday?
I thought you were great.
Thank you.
I thought it was, you know what? It was crazy. It made me excited about the fight. I hate to say it, but it got me wet. I wasn't even there. But it was one of those things where I think Conor felt like the first fight, he did too much press. And this one, he hasn't done a lot of press. So it's sort of, I mean, there's a buzz, but it wasn't like as big of a buzz as the first time. And I think that was something that kind of like, oh yeah, this is going to be really funny again. I wasn't sure why Nate Diaz left. I know he was annoyed that Conor came late.
Yeah.
But then why did he just get up and leave? And then the whole bottle, and then Jake Shields threw a coffee, which I thought was pretty funny. Everyone was throwing water bottles, and Shields is like, fuck Starbucks. And
Jake Shields had a latte. I mean, there's no question.
I'll tell you, though, Connor's got an arm. I got to give him credit. Yeah. I mean, he could play for the Browns right now. I know they need a fucking...
Though if you get fined for, throwing a shoe at a press conference, I can't wait to find out what the fine is going to be for this one.
Yeah, that's... everybody saw this. If anybody didn't see this, there was a press conference yesterday for UFC 202, the fight this weekend at T-Mobile on Saturday night. Conor McGregor and Nate Diaz in their rematch. These two don't get along. And so we go to the press conference. I'm, part of the media, like George. And so we assemble, and we're waiting there to ask our questions. And Conor McGregor is very late. He's very, very late. And they go ahead and start without him. And it's going, and then he shows up, and he sits down. And about 5 minutes after he sits down, Nate Diaz just decides he's going to get up and walk off. But the problem is, when Nate Diaz goes somewhere, 20 people wearing the same T-shirt have to follow. It's like, it's not a simple process. It's not like, hey, honey, I'm going to pull the car around. It's like, hey, will you start passing the word down the line that we're all going? And so they all have to get up and move, and they make a lot of noise when they do. And next thing I knew... bottles, fortunately plastic bottles of water, and Monster Energy drink cans. I mean, there was product placement that is the official energy drink of the UFC, were being hurled at various media members' heads. So,
they got fined by Reebok for not throwing Reebok water.
Right, yes.
But you know what, though? On seriousness, though, I actually thought it was actually, as far as on Diaz's part, a pretty smart move. Here you have a Conor McGregor who's very used to, at this point, gaining momentum by having a psychological edge over his opponents with any kind of his antics and controlling. So by him showing up an hour late to the press conference, he's trying to show everybody, and Nate in particular, who the man is, who's in charge. Exactly. So he struts in with his ego, sits down, and then mid-question while he's talking, I think that it threw a chink, through a monkey wrench in the mechanics of his mind. He's like, oh, shit, what's going on? These guys are leaving. And his only retort was to just get pissed off and start chucking shit and get angry. Everybody gets up and leaves, and it kind of clowned him. I thought on the Diaz part of the camp, I mean, they're tough guys, but I don't think many times do I say that they make a smart move, but pretty smart move.
But it's crazy, though. It's like
I just get passive-aggressive. I don't throw things back. I just look at you and go, well, I'm sorry to see that you cannot control your temper.
But it is kind of sad, though. Like, you never see, like Demetrius Johnson, who's the best pound-for-pound fighter in the world right now, you don't see you and John Dawson throwing Capri Suns at each other.
I think Frank hit on it. It's all about psychological warfare. Conor McGregor's used to being the hype train going to these fights. He's used to having that went up, or like the show starts when I get here. There's a McGregor show in town. The traffic was a little. He has that, that aura about him. Even today with the open workouts, when he's answering the question, he's moving back and forth. It's almost like a crack at you. It's like, I just can't wait to get my fix when I get out of here. I'm like, when I see it, I'm like, dude, you're emotionally attached to this fight. Now you're emotionally invested into it, instead of like, I'm a goner, calm, collective, be light on my feet, not make the same mistakes I did last time. I don't see that at him. I see him fucking pissed.
I think the reason why he has to be such a psychological, he's very good at it. But I also think that the things that I've seen in his last fights, and that last fight with Nick, or Nate, I'm looking at it, I'm like, wow, bro, the minute the choke was on your neck, you were tapping like a, I'm like, it's kind of sad the girl before you actually went to sleep in the choke, you know what I mean? Like, but So, but I mean, so I don't think that as far as mental toughness, I don't think he has that.
Wait a minute.
So
what?
I think as far as fighting back, I don't see it. I think he's a front runner that if he crushes you in the first round, I mean, he's a very good athlete, very strong. He's like a lion.
Frank, but, you nailed it.
Lions don't like to fight off their back.
That, he plays the mental warfare game, and it's the party doesn't start until he gets there, and the Diaz brothers flip the script. I think it was premeditated. Gilbert Melendez was on our show today. And he had that, you know, that sly smile like they were up to something. And so the party may start when you get there, but it ends when we leave.
Right.
And so that messed with Connor. The F-bombs were flowing. You could just see he was chewing the gum.
Yeah, no, it rattled him.
I think he just really looked like he was rattled.
I think the camp definitely got an edge on him mentally in that.
But Frank and Demetrius, I know, you know, us three being fighters on the stage. But now,
even funnier because there's only one of us at the moment that are fighting.
But did you guys ever get into fights where that has helped or hurt you getting too amped up or too emotional?
Go ahead, man. I mean, you see me. I look like I smoked a joint half the time when I walk out to the fight. So. Probably the opposite. I wish the guy would have insulted my wife or something, get a little amped up.
Not me, man. I don't get emotionally attached. You know, I fought as an amateur out of emotion and it didn't work out for me. But for me, it's just... You know, two things are going to fucking happen. You're either going to win or lose. So once you realize that, then you just go out there and see what does.
Yeah, but you have an infectious positive attitude. You cannot be in a good mood. You cannot not be in a good mood around this guy. Like, I would imagine if I... No, it's true. I would imagine, like, if I were going to fight you and I walked up there with all this vibrato, I would be walking back going, he's like a really nice guy.
Yeah, I don't know. I saw him kicking a dog in the back there, just so you guys know that. He was...
But to actually, you know, to really just springboard off of what Demetrius is saying, he's actually correct, you know, in that when you attach yourself emotionally to things, it can be good. You get the mount, you're like, man, I'm on top of somebody, fuck, I'm here, right? Emotional attachment, because you're emotional in the fight. Guy ups and rolls and you're on the bottom, you're like, oh, fuck, shit, I just missed, you know. That wastes energy. It's fatiguing. So whether you mount somebody or they have you mount is just a problem, or you just, okay, well, now I got to go for this. Well, now I'm going to set up. Now I'm going to hit him here. He's going to lift up his hand up there. You know, oh, shit, he's going for here. Let me counter. Oh, you know what? I think he's setting me up. The whole time you're keeping yourself clinical.
Not to pile on McGregor, but, and by the way, it's safe to do because there's not many Irish here today. It's mostly a Diaz crowd. But not to pile on, but I was at the open workouts today. And McGregor, the first thing out of him was fuck Diaz, fuck Nate Diaz, this and that. You can just tell it still carried over because of that one moment. Yeah. And even at the end, his coach came up to him, said something, and I think you'd have to be an idiot not to read into it. They asked him something. He tried to do the drop the mic moment, fuck Nate Diaz, and walked off. Yeah, there's a bunch of momos sitting out there going, yeah, McGregor. But still, I believe Diaz is still winning the mental warfare and that it's in McGregor's head.
I'll tell you the craziest thing about the most overlooked thing about the press conference yesterday. Oh, by the way, before I forget, Frank, make a mental note. That Holly Holm choke joke, that's got to go in your next stand-up set. How did that not make the set?
I remember. Awesome. Hey, babe.
Yeah, that was an applause break there. But to me, I thought the most overlooked thing about the press conference yesterday was the befuddled look on Anthony Rumble Johnson and Glover Teixeira as they were standing there on the stage next to these two guys are fighting Saturday night. These giant light heavyweights standing there just totally. I told Frank and I talked to Rumble this morning, and I told him, I said, you two guys look like summer camp counselors at the boys' club who had lost control of their field trip. And it's just like, he's looking at him, I thought you were going to watch him. Well, I thought you were supposed to be watching. Well, who's going to round him up now?
Yeah. I think Rumble was pissed they weren't throwing milkshakes. So, Frank, by the way, were you, we talked to you before, UFC 200. Were you surprised how well Brock did in that fight against Hunt?
Actually, I was. I thought he was going to come out and fight like a mixed martial artist, and... he actually fought intelligently. He avoided striking whatsoever. So all the things we said he was afraid of, that he had no chin, didn't want to get hit, I was correct. It's just that I didn't realize that he was going to just completely out-wrestle Mark. And, you know, Mark Hunt, I didn't expect it either. It was basically a takedown, hold him down, and a type of match, which I thought was brilliant against Mark Hunt, his opponent. But in hindsight, I wouldn't have, you know, I didn't call that looking into it. Had he exchanged a little bit, you know, I think he wouldn't have ever fixed the things he has a problem with. So it was a smart thing and saying, hey, look, I'm never going to be able to exchange blows with somebody. I'm too much of a chicken shit. But I am an NCAA champion. I probably shoot and take him down and put him down. And he did. So, hey, man, I was very impressed by a guy that caught me and fucking put me on my ass in 3 minutes, you know.
Yeah, no, were you surprised about the steroids afterwards?
No, I remember sitting there. Not that I want to throw things out there about Tess, I don't make accusations, but I'm like, man, fuck, he looks good. He is really ripped right now. Like, I need to get with his nutritionist, you know?
Yeah. Did you give him any of your kangaroo meat before the hotel?
No, no, it looks like a few times over he ran into it, so...
You want people to at least speculate. You know, I take my shirt off and people are just like, all natural.
That's what I've always gone for.
Now, today it came out that John Jones was taking Cialis. They're saying it was boner pills.
The Anderson Silva defense?
Really? Or is this
no, I swear, no, not a bit. I'm the guy who will poke anything. But no, honestly, that's what they're saying. They're saying it was Viagra, Cialis. That's what was tested. I mean, that's what they're saying. So he might get reinstated due to his, you know, lack of boner. And
all right, time to pull back the curtain. So
let me say one thing though. He may escape USADA, but he also has to deal with Nevada State Athletic Commission. So before anybody gets too excited,
well, know, not him. There's no at least hurdles. You know.
But yeah. As far as I know, though, on a serious note, Viagra, for example, I know is actually still illegal. It's on a banned control substance. Because of nitrogen retention. So as a football player and whatnot, you know, for a while they were trying to sit there and go, well, I'd have a prescription for Viagra, and they cut that out. So I'm assuming USADA probably might have the same thing.
All right, I got to pull back the curtain for a second. I told you guys, Demetrius and I carpooled over here, right? So we're in the car, and we're talking about this John Jones Cialis rumor. He brings up. And he and his wife, Destiny, are in the back seat. Right on cue, right? He goes, yeah, so that's, you know, the rumor Cialis. And his wife goes, what's Cialis? And I thought, yeah, Demetrius. No fucking idea what Cialis is. And then we explain it, and she's like, now it does what? It's like, for what? And my girlfriend's like, oh, it's for erectile dysfunction. It's like you, when you can't get going, you can't. And I was like, shut up! But you're talking about looking like a pimp. He's like, yeah. Keep explaining it.
So we better hope that John's wife knows what Cialis is.
Yeah, I guess we better.
Well, John's
wife. That's a hard explanation.
Well, John's wife knows that John likes to see Alice. Actually, that's the name of his mistress, is Alice, and that's just the girl he's seeing.
So we mentioned a second ago, Demetrius has his next fight coming up, December 3rd. He's going to defend the flyweight title, and I'm hearing a rumor now it's going to be at the Palms. And I don't know if you guys heard how they're picking his opponent. He's beaten everybody at least once, and some of them twice. They're actually going to have a TV show to cast an opponent for you because they've run out of top 10. It's like America's Got MMA talent. We got to find somebody who can fight you that we haven't seen you beat yet. That's got to feel pretty good.
Well, I think it's a great concept. You know, to begin with, they're going around to find every single champion from different organizations. So you got guys from Legacy fighting RFA. You have the Shooto Brazil champion. You have the Shooto Japan champion. You know, there's the UFC. You have Rizin. You have ONE FC. You have all these different organizations out there. And just like, you know, there's heavyweight champions in ONE FC, Legacy, Bellator. IFC, Bellator, all those champions out there. So for me, they get to grab all those champions and put them under one household. And so you have basically a tournament of champions, and the winner of that gets to fight me.
Are you going to fight them one at a time or two against you?
No, just seems one guy.
See, I was thinking that
next season.
In a unique twist, you're going to have the two coaches like that are right underneath you, like number ranked 2 and 3, and they prepare these guys to fight you when they really want the shot themselves. So it's kind of like a unique twist to the whole season.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I talked to Joseph and Harry Cejudo about it. You know, Joseph, I mean, you know, I would believe he is a number one contender. I mean, he's on a five-fight win streak. He's beating everybody they put in front of him. But, you know, the UFC is like, dude, I don't think fucking nobody wants to see that fight again. And I was like, dude, you call me. I'm the type of guy or the champion who is like, I want to fight this guy. Oh, I want to fight this guy. Literally, like, when a phone call rings at my house, you know, Matt's like, hey, this is who you're fighting. This is win. Bye, Matt. See you tomorrow at the gym. Bye. That's how my conversation goes. There's no, I don't want to fight him. That's literally how many car stations you go.
So I wonder with Joe Benavidez and Henry Cejudo coaching these guys, not only are they flyweight contenders who want the next crack, they're having to coach other flyweights for a title shot. I wonder if anybody's going to sandbag it. Like, I wonder if there's a temptation for Benavidez to take one of those guys aside and go, okay, first, let me give you the book on him. First of all, he's super slow. Okay? He's super slow.
Is it true that they're all going to live in one big box of Pringles?
And it was good, you know, as we talked, after the show got done wrapping up and filming, Joseph said it was probably one of the greatest experiences in his life and his career, and he says he wouldn't take it for granted, you know. And I think it's a good thing for him to do it. You know, I'm hoping I'll be able to do it one time in my career just to be able to coach other people I've coached before. But, you know, it has to be the right weight class for me. But I think Joseph said he had a great time doing it.
Yeah. I mean, I also like the twist, too, that instead of seeing the finale of two guys on the show that we've known are going to fight for quite some time, we're going to get a winner of the show. We're going to know who that winner is. We're going to have time to know him because he's going to be your opponent. So we're actually going to get a better buildup. Because I always find the weeks that they do the Ultimate Fighter, where you don't know unless it's been leaked to you till right up at the very end who's fighting, it's kind of, you don't know who that person is. It's like a mystery guest that's showing up.
Yeah, is Benavidez and Cejudo are co-main to your card?
Yeah, I believe the co-main event.
So it's some backup just in case.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That works.
I mean, yeah, I think it's a great card. You know, I always tell people, I don't care fuck who's co-main event, the very first of the fight. If I'm on TBS, PBS, at the Sesame Street, I'm going to fight regardless if I'm on pay-per-view or not. I just don't care.
Now, who do you think wins that fight between those two?
I don't know. We're going to see. You know, I'm going for Joseph. I like Joseph. You know, I always got his back from WEC days to go see him co-play and have on our trip in Australia. It's a tough fight. You know, Henry Cejudo, he's still new to the sport. I mean, a lot of you guys think he looked invincible. To me, when I saw him fight live, I was like, he's a fucking plant. And my wife's like, what do you mean he's a fucking plant? I was like, he goes in the middle, he fucking plants his feet, and he doesn't move, and then he unroots and he backs up. That's all he fucking does. And then so I think one of the things I'm fighting that I'm being able to do now is when I see my opponents fight live, I'm able to analyze them with my own eyes in person and get my butterflies already out. So when I saw him fight in Mexico, and I was like, everybody thinks you're unbeatable, but you're not that good. But yeah. Next question or next thing.
Have you now? What? Give me an update on how video game playing is going.
Video game playing is going good.
This is fascinating. When I talked to, I don't know if you guys know this story, but Demetrius basically plays video games every hour of the day he's not fighting, and he only fights like three times a year, so it's pretty much around the clock, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And you do it. You show. I can tune in and I can watch it on your Twitch channel.
Yep, Twitch is Mighty Mouse UFC 125. So typically, if I'm not training or spend time with my wife or kids, I'm basically playing video games, and I'm doing it all day, every day.
I'm so mad that you were able to figure that out, because, look, when I'm training for a fight, you know, 8 weeks out, 10 weeks out, I can use that as the excuse for, like, all right, a tough morning session, I'm going to sit on my ass for 3 or 4 hours and play video games, and I get left alone. And then, you know, the 2 weeks before the fight, I get to stay up whenever I want to play video games. But then once the fight's over with, the shit, you know, it's over with, you know, I'm like, God damn it, you know, I better put the stuff away. But this guy figured out how to look over to his wife and go, it's putting money in the account. You know what I mean? Like, how is she supposed to tell you not to play? It's like, no, I'm actually working right now. You know?
I just can't believe we've come to a point in society where, like, playing video games is, like, one thing. Now kids watch other people play video games.
And make millions of dollars.
It's insane.
Well, I mean, you look at fucking Kim Kardashian. What the fuck's she doing? She going out blowing money, eating
so you're the Kim Kardashian of video games?
You goddamn right I am. All you guys subscribe to the channel, Twitch, do it. But
I think it's great, man. You can make a living at it. Go ahead.
They do. They have the arenas now. You see it down there. I watch it on the news now.
$20 million for the Dota 2 pot. $20 million for Dota 2.
Five guys get to win it, split it.
And what are you ranked in that?
I don't play Dota 2.
Why not? It's $20 million.
I don't like it. It's a MOBA.
Really?
Yeah. It's
what games do you play?
World of Warcraft, Street Fighter V, Call of Duty, Counter Strike. Gears of War 4 is about to come out. Resident Evil 7.
Are you ranked in any of those? Or?
Street Fighter V, I'm ranked silver, which is pretty legit. I think at one time I was ranked like, I think 3,900.
Are you ever gonna play? Are you ever gonna play like the middle of your fights, like in between rounds, like you're playing video games?
I've played video games leading up to the weigh-ins when I fight Henry Cejudo. I was playing video games before I went to the arena to fight Henry Cejudo. And after I got done, I went back to the hotel and went on Twitch. I was like, "Yep, guys, fight went good. Things escalated real quick." But I'm gonna go out drink some alcohol. You guys have a good night. See you later, Twitch.
All right, now. Now, when you're ranked, my memory of being ranked at a game is you enter your initials in the screen, and then they stay there until the power goes out at the Circle K.
Hey,
right?
I got a good story about
that. Am I dating myself?
No, listen. Yeah, yeah. I'm with you. I think I'm older than you.
You are.
So I was the king at a place called Noggles. It was a game called Track and Field. And they had a
with
bunch
the ball?
Of... Yeah, had the balls, the buttons, and everything, and I had these little fast twitch fingers.
Yeah.
And but you know, basically.
And then you still can't keep a girlfriend, huh?
Nope.
All right.
That's what the tongue's for. No, so what happened was people started pulling out their combs and their pencils, and so they'd lay it down.
Oh.
This, you
know, yeah.
Buttons, more of a reaction. So I had all the records. I had really fast fingers. Guys would pull out combs on me and pencils and everything. And my nickname was Fly, F-L-Y, because I could fly. So I had a bunch of events, and I was just untouchable. Anyway, I come in one day, and all my records are gone. And they didn't just barely beat them, because when I broke a record, it was like by a hundredth of a second. This time, they got shattered. I was like, what the fuck? Some guy named JR. So I was pissed. Anyway, it took like 2 weeks, and finally somebody called me and said, hey, JR is at Noggles right now.
He's there.
And I just figured out why he's shattering your records. I go, why is that? What this motherfucker did was he got a Snoopy toothbrush, all right, and he poked a hole inside of a pencil going sideways like this, and then he would just hit the vibrate.
Fuck JR.
Yeah.
Just hit the vibrate, and just while I'm doing the fingers and trying to concentrate on when to, you know, hurdle or jump, he would just hit the, you know, the vibrate button.
Shattered
all my records.
Where's the honor in that?
Dude, I was so pissed off, man. And
so
every
basically,
time...
this is the difference between masturbating for a man and for a woman.
Exactly.
It's not fair.
Wow. It's true, though. Demetrius is this very accomplished video game player, and he's turned it into this little cottage industry. I mean, I've seen it before where like, I walked into your hotel room, and you're, like, talking to all your fans who are watching you play the video games, and you're doing some playing and everything. And then I also walked in on a meeting of the Fighters Wives Women's Auxiliary. They were meeting about this very thing. I don't know if you know about this or not. I walked in, and your wife was talking to some of my girlfriend, some of the other wives, and I distinctly hear her say, oh, I thought it was ridiculous, too. And then he paid our mortgage with it this month. And they're like, what? What is this? He paid the mortgage? Now they're interested.
Why are you always walking into places? What's going on with you?
Well, you know, I'm a reporter, all right? Yeah. I have to break news. Yes. So who's everybody got in the fight this weekend? Frank, you and I were kind of breaking it down on our episode earlier this week. You like Diaz, right?
I do. I actually, before their first fight, I still picked Nate Diaz when I think a lot less people picked him at that moment, just because, you know, obviously, even if you're a fan, you're thinking, shit, man, 9 days notice, and this guy's had a full camp, and, you know, you're jumping in here, and you're even having to, that's one thing that actually aggravated me about the first fight was the Conor fans, the apologists saying, well, he moved up 2 weight classes. I'm like, yeah, but he fought a guy who also moved up a weight class. Nate's last fight was at 155. The reason why 9 days couldn't make the weight. And so he fought a guy who was fighting up a weight class also. And so same things. I think that no matter what, Nate's a warrior. He's only been knocked out once in his career. All his decision losses are by decision. If someone can beat him, they wrestle him to death. But no one really beats his ass. You know what I mean? Like, it isn't like a fight where it's like, I owned him. It's like, yeah, you wrestled him to death. You know, typically when you see a lot of his losses. No one's submitting him, and Connor's not going to submit him, and no one's knocking him out. And so, not that Connor couldn't win the fight, but if it gets out of the first round, I think that Connor's dead. If you think about it, like I talked about a little bit before, just in case if any of the fans who didn't hear our podcast, if Connor's very capable of rocking Nate also, right? So if he rocks him, the difference, and we know that obviously Nate is very capable of knocking Connor, rocking him, we've seen that. Except for if Connor gets rocked, he has nowhere to go. He can't change levels, shoot, he can't clinch, hold on, pull guard. There's nothing he can do to recover. He has to sit out there and basically throw back after he's rocked. If he rocks Nate, Nate can clinch. Nate could just sit down on his ass, recover for a second, you know what I mean? Pull his feet up and go, all right, now what? If Connor's stupid enough to jump in, he's going to end up in a triangle. And, you know, you thought it's going to be bad.
Who you like, DJ?
It's hard, man, because I think, you know, Conor McGregor, I believe Conor McGregor is faster than Nate Diaz. He's also more explosive than him. I mean, you look at the first fight, he was outmaneuvering him. And I think the biggest thing that I was envisioning that they stopped the fight due to cuts because Nate Diaz has a lot of bad scar tissue over his eyes. And sometimes you see it, people get cut and the blood, and the doc's like, oh, you can't see, we're going to stop it, it's a liability. And Conor will be like, oh, I fucking beat you, I told you, blah, 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 blah. But I really do like Nate in this fight just because he's bigger, he's longer, he's had a full camp. You know, last time he came on drinking tequila, he was actually in Mexico. We were at Mango Day.
No, I saw that afterwards.
Yeah, did you run into him on the
beach
too?
No. We didn't run into him. We got there a week after he got there, so... but it's a tough fight. You know, I always look at all the fights as an athlete, and I believe both of those guys can get it done. But I do truly believe that if Conor's going to beat Nate, it's going to be due to stoppage from the blood, or he's going to take it 5 rounds. I can see Nate finishing Conor because once he's done it before, and like Conor said, he goes, I'm going to go fucking forward. Now he's emotionally invested, so we'll see.
What about you, George?
Nate Diaz, same thing with what Frank said, just all the preparation he has. He's the bigger guy. And I think now he's winning the mental warfare. He's beaten him once. He's got a lot of variables on his side going, you know, that Conor has not dealt with. I mean, coming off wins is easier. You get a lot of confidence. They have a lot of momentum. But coming off a loss, it's difficult. He beat him up so bad in terms of, like, you know, taking away his star power that this guy now kind of is duplicating what Nate does. He brings in a jiu-jitsu standout, you know, a boxing guy, all replicating the 6'1 lanky frame. Just so that he can kind of get that feel, stuff that he never did before. So I just don't think he can close the gap in 4 months. I think Diaz wins, and he probably gets a stoppage as well.
What do you got, Adam?
Yeah, I would say Diaz, just because Nate's a big guy. Like, I stood next to him. I think he might walk around at 205, 210.
Long
and
reach.
I think if this fight was at 155 or 45, a sucked-out Diaz, I might give it to Conor just on that. But at a healthy 170... I mean, Conor must walk around at 170. You're talking about a guy who walks around at 175 versus a guy who walks around at 210. And it's just bigger. I just think bigger, more weapons. And I don't think he has the ability to really to hurt him. Like, I was at the first fight. He landed a bunch of kicks, a bunch of punches, but Nate didn't go anywhere. And I would have to go with Diaz.
All right, so if you guys were wondering what Adam was showing me on his phone, far be it from me to make this show about me. But... I have apparently ignited a mini controversy online here. And you know what? You don't even know about this yet. I haven't even told you about this. I've mentioned it to DJ. I was dealing with this ever since yesterday. Just go ahead and explain.
So on the Underground, which I love the Underground.
It's a popular forum.
It's a popular MMA website. The title of the thread was "Weird Hair Guy at Every Press Conference." And someone's like, I feel like I'm watching some kind of comedy movie every time I see a UFC press conference, and there's this dude. He seems so out of place, but always has the best questions. Who is this guy? And why does his hair always look like he just got out of bed, right? First comment in, that's the drummer from Cinderella.
Fred Curry? Yeah. Lest anyone think I can't name the drummer. I'm right about that, aren't I, Vinny? Fred Curry? Yes, thank you. I know the
Kenny
drummer
Florian fan goes, does his hair get worse at every press conference? What's his screen name? I bet he has camo cargo shorts.
Yeah, and then, camo cargo
then
shorts.
He goes, the next guy goes, that guy gives me the willies. It looks like Chris Angel fucked a potato. Then someone says, Nikki Six asking the hard-hitting questions. And then he says, that's the guy that does phone booth fighting podcasts with Frank Mir. They're like BFFs.
Screen name
and
Richard
And I think he
Hunter.
Does a radio show. Definitely a weird-looking fellow, though. Then someone says, Bill Hader in drag. Chris Angel and Agent Smith from The Matrix had a child together. Hey, 90s rock called. They said they want their style back. I think it's Bill. And then,
I'd go with 80s rock.
Then someone beer and hot dogs. Oh, LOL, that's Richard Hunter. He's actually a pretty cool dude. He's the co-host of Frank Mir's podcast, and he runs the Bunny Ranch.
Yeah.
Then someone says, that's Big Dick Hunter. Not kidding. That's what he goes by, Richard Hunter. And then someone goes, the Bunny Ranch manager, he looks like a gloomy emo kid. Laugh my ass off. But yeah, usually ask good questions. Then it keeps going. Then people start posting pictures like you can't see the guy from of Bill Hader. And then he goes, LOL, a whorehouse manager, MMA reporter? I'm not even surprised.
All right.
First time you were on our show, didn't the Clearwater Beach Bad Boy call in and say, that was very cool. How'd you guys score Robert Smith from The Cure?
Yeah, I think so.
You've heard them all, haven't you?
Yeah, but let me tell you what the weird twist this took last night on Twitter. Those are all interesting. You know who posted about this? None other than Angela Overkill Hill.
Yeah.
Right? Former UFC women's strawweight fighter. She posted on her Twitter last night, the bottle throwing stuff was fun, but the real story is the hair metal slash shih tzu hybrid that somehow got a press pass. She put a picture of me up. I tweeted back to her. I was like, well, somehow he's been getting a press pass for the last decade.
Yes.
They just hating on you. That's all they do. They just hating.
I don't know. I have looked unemployable my whole life, and you used to be able to get laid looking
then
like
someone
this.
Says
trust
came,
me.
Somebody says he came up in Dallas-Fort Worth area. He did a night show on a sports station and got let go because he got too weird and political. His nickname
That's
is Big Dick
true.
Hunter. He got married on the HBO reality show Cat House.
Yeah.
Wow. I thought this guy was lying. It was about... Why did you get married on the show Cat House?
Well, I was there anyway. I just thought it would be fun for the people attending the wedding.
Did the marriage last?
Yeah. Quite a number of years.
Oh, nice.
But I will tell you, you know, guys, and this is more for the guys because girls like weddings, but you know, guys, how when you have a wedding, there's not just a huge surge of guys who want to go? Try getting married at a whorehouse. 100% attendance. 100% attendance from your guy friends. Yeah, that's true.
No, man, you've had some life. You got to write a book, man.
I probably should.
Yeah.
Well, apparently all these people that watch these press conferences would buy it if it just said, buy weird hair guy.
Look, man, if they're talking about you, you're doing something right.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, I'm sitting here actually thinking that Demetrius has actually shaken my confidence a little bit in the Nate prediction when you started talking about the cuts. I'm sitting here thinking, man, if all of a sudden the doctors come out and they have Connor's opponent, looks like he might be questionable whether they can stop the fight, it might quickly get stopped.
I mean, you look at the first fight, he was getting so busted up because... I mean, you look at
I don't mean because he's hurt, but if he's bleeding...
Yeah, they'll stop. They're like, well, you can't see...
It might be pretty controversial. I mean, and can't argue. Like, oh, the fight's... Yeah, you know, I mean, the guy might... You know, if he gets a hangnail, they're going, oh, stop the fight. It's over with. Connor wins.
Now, is there... The one thing I'm a little scared of... I want to make bets on this, right? I love doing my... I actually won my first parlay for the first time in 4 years with Woodley and Ellenberger. But is there any type of thing where... Like that movie where the guy finally wins and he gets soft? Because Nate Diaz was like... I got $20,000. I'm driving a piece of shit Yugo. This is just angry, right? And now he's happy. You see him smiling. You see him going on ESPN Sports Center.
I don't know if the Diaz brothers ever be happy. They seem like a pretty ruthless, angry group.
Yeah, and I think Diaz has always been like that. Even Nick Diaz, you know, I've talked to Nate Diaz, you know, and he seems like a nice guy. I think, you know, when he's seen him, he's in that mode when he's like, I'm ready to fucking fight. Stockton 209, I'm going to slap you. And then when he's outside of fighting, if you don't disrespect him, and I think he's fine. I think he's like any other man. He's just that, he just walks that fucking line where it's like, you fucking disrespect me, we're gonna fucking throw down. And that's what you see 99.90% of the time.
I think the eventual undoing of Nate Diaz is going to be when that point comes in technology where we do away with area codes. Because you know that's coming, right? At some point, we will not be using area codes anymore.
No,
when he has no 209 identity, I don't know what's gonna happen anymore.
I mean, he leads a clean lifestyle, like mostly vegan, right?
Yeah, he's a vegan.
And I don't really see them getting in too much trouble, like getting drunk or anything.
Yeah, I mean, you never see Nick Diaz like, oh, TMZ Live, hey, motherfucker, that's my weed, blah, blah, blah. You never see that. You never see him beating women. You never see him breaking a law, speeding. You see guys who are actually clean athletes who carry themselves well. Yeah.
They just did a triathlon like a month ago or something.
Yeah, like
so
knock
in
a woman
shape,
out
they're
in
just,
a...
Clean living guys.
Got that fighter gene, too. He's so... I mean, he's a tough cat, man.
Marijuana's natural, man. It's so clean.
Another fight. This fight, though, this whole card is hard to pick. Anthony Johnson versus Glover. My mind's going with Anthony Johnson. At the same time, Glover's never been stopped.
Right.
He's got great cardio, it seems like. And what happens if Anthony can't hurt him in the first round? I think Johnson will be able to. But what do you guys think?
I agree with you as far as if he can't hurt him. But, I mean, Anthony hits hard. I mean, the guy... When I was in Albuquerque and Andre Alaska, they fought at heavyweight, came back, he broke his jaw with shots, you know what I mean? Andre's jaw. And so I think that early on, I think this fight might actually get stopped just because the speed of Anthony Johnson, besides also he's a dual threat. You know, if he changes levels and wants to throw hands, now he's the faster guy who has multiple threats, Glover Teixeira changes levels. Anthony's just worried about his hands. I don't think he's worried about him. Because, I mean, let's face it, Glover can come in, grab him on a leg, take one leg up off the ground. Anthony is so much better the wrestler. He's going to escape and not be put on his back. I mean, the guy over at Lassen was a national champion on the junior college level. I think that the only way that, well, I think not the only way I should say that, but I think the best way for Glover to win is if he's able to survive those shots, which I don't think is probable because he's going to get hit a lot more and not be able to exchange shots because of the speed difference and having to worry about the multiple aspects. But if Anthony gets tired, doesn't put him away, if all of a sudden, it's at the beginning of the third round and you see Anthony huffing in the corner, I'm like, oh, shit, then I'd be worried that it could be stopped in favor of Teixeira.
What do you think, DJ?
I second that. I mean, I think Glover Teixeira is going to be able, he has to weather those shots, and Rumble has to be able to take his time, pace himself, look for the shot, look for the knockout shot, and instead of just going balls to the wall and blowing his gas tank, then you get in the second, then you get to the third round. Good thing it's only a three-round fight, so he can kind of pace himself. But Glover Teixeira, he knows how to track people down. He's got great wrestling, and he has power too.
So we're going to wrap up here in just a second. If anybody has any questions, though, we kind of concluded our last taping with that, and we'll do that again. If anybody has any questions, we'll open it up to that. I'm going to ask one, though, while you're thinking of if you have one or not for anybody up here. So I was thinking about this, Demetrius, the other day. You know, Frank, with having two heavyweight titles, has, you know, enjoyed the talk for some time as far as he's gone in his career, knowing that he's going to go into the UFC Hall of Fame and go down as one of the greatest ever. But how old are you at this point?
30.
You are already, I think, being acknowledged as one of the greatest ever. And I think at this point, I think you're in the Hall of Fame. Do you agree with that?
It all depends, you know.
Absolutely.
How's that for a softball?
Yeah.
All right, I think you're awesome. Do you agree with that? But I think that's true. I mean, I don't think I could really make a case against that. I mean, maybe, you know, you may defend a title more than anybody else has defended a title when it's all said and done. We'll see. I mean, you're kind of starting to see that record maybe off in the distance. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, it would be awesome if they induct me into the Hall of Fame. You know, it's not something I'm striving for. But if they do it, that's awesome. And, you know, that's the goal, is to hopefully beat the record and keep on going and hopefully never lose ever again.
Demetrius could lose his next five fights and he'd still go into the Hall of Fame.
I think so.
I mean, he's accomplished is amazing.
Don't try that, but I think so.
What he's accomplished is amazing at different levels, different weight classes, 135, 125, the title defenses. I mean, completely cleaning out a division. They have to do a reality show, for crying out loud, to find him, his next opponent, because the next best guy he's already beaten twice. And that guy's got a 5-5 win streak, which is pretty impressive. I hope you don't mind me saying this, but I really hope you and Joseph do the dance a third time, because, he's gone out and beaten five quality opponents, so I think that'll happen. But he's for sure a Hall of Famer. Of course, Frank Mir is a Hall of Famer, but Demetrius is, right now, at this moment, the greatest fighter, man, the walk on the planet, pound for pound.
Until Jones comes back.
And you know what? One other thing. You said, do you have any questions? Yeah. I want to ask a question.
Yeah.
Frank, you did outstanding here with the set. Seriously, everybody was laughing their asses off. I know you were in a zone, but
they were worried about the choke after the
fight. But I want to know, Demetrius, we need to get you up here. You're so comfortable with the mic, and I've seen you on Twitch. And
That's a whole nother ball game. You know, when I'm playing video games and I get a couple beers in me, then honestly, it's just me talking.
You got the rooster joke.
I like that joke. That's a good joke, right? I don't think it would happen. I like to stay behind, do my Twitch thing. And honestly, when I'm comfortable, I just basically talk shit back to the fans when they say, hey, you should talk shit to, make some more money. And I was like, hey, motherfucker, how about you subscribe to the channel if you're so worried about making money? $5.99 a month, you don't have to worry about it. I'm going to get paid.
Would the audience like to see Demetrius try it one time, the stand-up?
Yeah.
He would
do
great.
Like that?
I hope he rethinks it.
Maybe I have a question.
2017,
Adam,
come in
Adam,
here.
Adam, that will be the champion's eventual undoing, right? When he gets too focused on the comedy and we run into him like in 2 years and he's doing a week in Columbus, Ohio. He's all strung out in the dressing room just trying to pull it together for his late show.
Now, who's that? I thought it was your wife. I apologize. Who's the woman that's always screaming during your fights?
That's not her.
But who is that?
We call her the shrieker.
Every one of your fights, there's this woman that... everything. You don't know who that is?
Dude, every time a black guy fights, there's someone screaming. Just Tyron Woodley, I think his sister was screaming. Rashad Evans, same thing.
Rashad Evans, yep.
Yeah, why is what's going on there?
That's just like your number one fan?
I guess black folks don't like other black folks don't like other black folks get beat up. And so you had some black folk out there named the street who just... No!
But people have commented about that woman, right? You've heard about that before. That Oh, yeah. I think what fight card was that? That was a long time ago. And they're like, holy shit, I wasn't even fighting. I was at home, and me and my wife were sitting there like, damn, that bitch is loud. And someone goes, hey, Mighty Mouse, say what the shirt. I was like, dude, I'm not even fighting right now. She's right next to me. I know any time when we call it the Shrieker.
The Shrieker, yeah.
Wow. Demetrius is always my favorite guy to reference whenever – I've told him this before, but I get these calls because, like, my friends know that I work in MMA media and stuff like that, and I'll get the call where, like, my six – totally out of shape beer gut buddies have gotten together to watch the pay-per-view, and they call me. One of them has my number. They call me up. They'll be like, hey, I got a question. All right, my buddy here is watching Demetrius, and he says, now he goes right now about 185, and he's asking if he quit drinking beer for about 4 weeks, okay? Now, what? Hold on. Okay, 4 weeks. And doesn't eat fast food, could he kick his ass? Could he kick Demetrius's ass? And I'm like, it would go so differently than you imagine it in your mind, you know? I mean, it's like, first of all, he's going to hit you, and by the time he hits you, he won't be there anymore. Like, you won't know what hit you. It'll just be gone. And then you know, maybe he lets you do the part where you stand there and hit him until your arms get tired. Now it's his turn. Right? I mean, that's always a fun argument to have. And that's kind of a cool, like, superpower to have, I think. You know, because when you walk around, you look like Frank. You're kind of a visually scary-looking guy. You're like the secret weapon.
No, man. I mean, like, for me, it's, you know, I remember grappling with Rich Franklin when he was the world champion. And then I remember tapping him out. And he goes, what the fuck happened? And Matt goes, he doesn't stop moving, huh? But then again, you know, it's all in reference, you know? You know, I could not imagine grappling with him. I'm like, holy fuck, you're strong, Frank. And he goes, yeah, this is what a real man would do to you, DJ.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
I had to.
I'm like, no!
Usually when I'm doing grapples.
I had to share a hotel room with him and grapple with him by accident in the middle of the night. I was like, you're not at home. Get off me.
It's funny you bring that up. It's because it actually works out the way. Sometimes when I wrestle or grapple with somebody that's much smaller than I am, and I have to apologize because I have to stall. You know what I mean? Like at a certain point, you know, someone my size, I can't move for move. You know, hip moves, foot. Blah, blah. I'm like, shit, man. I'm gonna grab your ankle and fucking just. You're gonna sit still for a second, man. I'm gonna catch my breath. Give me a minute. I might have. You know what I mean? Like. So I'm like, it's not the most exciting thing to watch because I'm like, I can't move. If we go move for move, you're going to call the paramedics here in about 2 minutes. You know?
Does anybody have any questions before we wrap up? You can just shout them out. We're not being particularly organized about this. Anybody have anything you want to know? Anybody? Yeah. Okay, let me repeat this for the tape because I may not have picked it up. The question was, would you want to fight at multiple weight classes and maybe win a weight championship in another weight class besides 125?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I mean, the funny thing is that people out there, they don't know, like, the behind the scenes. But I've talked Dominic Cruz. I'm like, dude, you know, if I can be successful and keep on winning the fights and break the record, that's my main goal. I don't care about the 135-pound belt at all. I just want to break the record. That way people are like, oh, you know, who has the most consecutive title defense? It won't be Anderson Silva, it'll be Demetrius Johnson. I think that's really cool to have underneath my belt. If I can accomplish that, then I mean, what's the worst thing that's going to fucking happen? I go up there and fight Dominic Cruz. I lose. I already lost once, so it wouldn't be any difference. So I go up there, and if they give me the fight, I'll fight them at the same time. If I win, I have the belt. Then I'll still go back down to 125 just because I like fighting at 125. I like fighting guys who are 5'3 instead of fighting guys who weigh 165 pounds. And then when you fight at 135, you're going to take way more. Me and Frank were talking about this. Like, when you go up and fight another weight class, you're essentially fighting a bigger man, which is going to take more brain damage, more damage to the body, which can shorten your career. If I say 125, I can fight till I'm fucking 37, 38. I hope.
I feel the same way.
Anybody else? Yeah. How does it feel to win the title? You've done it twice, Frank.
You know what, though? I think when you're competitive and you're somebody who's driven, I think that having a title probably was exciting for about 60 seconds, honestly. I think that's what keeps people driven, is that when we accomplish something, it's not as satisfying as you guys would probably think it is, which in turn can, my wife gets a little frustrated with, because it can lead to a little bit of depression. But when I go to sleep that night, when I wake up the next morning, I'm like, all right, well, you know, that's fine, but let me look at what's next. And it really takes the wife coming in going, can we, you know, chill out, relax for a little bit. So, I mean, obviously I look back and I probably have my proudest moments about winning the title is when my children get to talk about it, you know, and, you know, my father won a title and, you know, he's championed this. I'm like, yeah, you know, and you guys, you know, you're better than I am and you could be, you know, completely pushed, you know, this is where the bar is, I expected more. So then that kind of gives me very much of a sense of accomplishment. But as far as on a personal level, it's like, all right, fine, that's great. But, what's, you know, it's kind of like climbing a mountain. You climb the tallest mountain and you look around, you're like, oh, shit, that one might be taller. But, and also now you're just, you're on your way to the next mountain.
See, that's the difference between him and I. That motivates him. I got named funniest comedian in Reno 3 years ago. I've been milking that for 3 years. Anybody else? Are we good?
Demetrius, answer the same question. What's it being like being champ?
What's that like?
You know, I remember when I first won it, I was just like, sweet, good shit, let's go home. Yeah, I go to work. No, I was working at that time. But then, like Frank said, you know, you're always looking. In mixed martial arts, it's not like the Super Bowl. You know, you win the Super Bowl, you go out, fly everywhere, do these big parties. Then you have another, 6 months to chill and live in that limelight to where you want it. In mixed martial arts, you win the belt. It's like, all right, you're going to be fighting. I won the belt in September. I defended it in January. Then I defended it in – I got surgery. Then I defended it in July. Then I defended it in December. Then I defended it this time, then this time. So it just keeps on going and going and going. So I mean, you really can't stop and take a second to sit back and actually enjoy it.
I actually was thinking about that right now. Tonight, we're walking in, and as I'm coming in, I'm looking up, and on NBC, Usain Bolt showing him running down the 200 meters again and stuff, and Raymond's watching. I'm like, oh, shit, you know, so we're there. And sure enough, the guy wins again, you know, makes it look easy even. And in my mind, there was a little bit of jealousy in the aspect of, it's like, he'll always be the Olympic gold medalist at that moment for 2012, no matter who comes back in 2016. They didn't beat him. They beat whoever they fought in 2016. I'm sitting there going, man, the champion, it's like, you know, we're kind of like, it's samurai, who's the guy I'm trying to reference? Afro Samurai, where it's like, once you have the band on, it's like you're fighting everybody. It's like, all right, well, this is, you know, what's your reward for being the champ? Well, now everybody's gunning for you. You're like, all right. And so, like, so for me to not be the champ no more, someone's going to kick my ass.
Now, when you were the champion the first time, were you still working at the strip club?
Yeah, I worked at the strip club all the way till 2008. After I submitted Brock Lesnar the first time, a situation occurred at the club. And all of a sudden, you know, there's a guy on his back, and I was trying to revive him after he didn't want to agree with me about leaving.
Did anybody test you and be like, oh, that's the hell, I could beat the UFC
champ? No, you know
what?
Not really, because anytime I saw a situation get aggressive, I could easily de-escalate it quickly. And for the most part, most men, which is understandable, you're at a strip club, there's alcohol, there's women, fighting shouldn't really be that high on the list at that moment, you know. So most of the time, because I was so quick to call people's bluff, that startled people, because most guys have to work themselves up. They can't be, there's very few people that are detached emotionally enough to go, hit that guy. All right, boom. Now what?
Frank had psychological advantage of walking up to the drunk and going, listen, you are acting unruly. If I have to take off this heavyweight championship belt, I am going to be annoyed.
That's the answer to the question. That's actually why I stopped in 08 after that fight with Lesnar, because it propelled me up to another level of fame. And then I go and was getting ready to do the reality show with Nogueira, which I won the title the second time. So in this situation, the guy gets up and his buddies go, shit, I think that was Frank Mir, you know, like they just choked you out. I'm like, oh, shit, man, this might not be a good thing. Continue working. So that's when I kind of came home, like, you know what? I got to get out of this. Because now, at that point, you know, the UFC got so popular that I couldn't just hold a regular job anymore.
But now he's moonlighting again in stand-up comedy.
Hey.
I said regular job.
I got to tell you, I was standing behind the stage, and most comedians are built, you know, more like the average guy, you know, me or whatever. And this stage was creaking. Could you hear that from right there? I could hear the back of the stage. Like, oh!
Frank, what was it like? I mean, you haven't really told us.
Oh, my part?
10 minutes you were up.
And I had some probably the same thing that people, when they look at fighting, you have an idea of what it's like to see someone go out there. So now it's my fight right now. And I've watched a ton of comedy. I love comedians. It's probably one of my favorite things to do in my off time is flip through Netflix and or be on YouTube and looking through different jokes, you know, comedy and different comics. So I had different ideas of what it would be. So Richard comes over to help me out, which I'm very thankful for. And I feel bad for guys that have to start out and just grind in clubs by themselves and just basically trial and error. I got to go ahead and work with a guy that was already a black belt, right? And so I sits there and he goes, all right, put down some ideas. So I'm up there and my wife and I have a little notepad. I'm writing things down. Then as I know he's coming over that day, I put it on my phone. I print it out so it all looks nice, you know. So I show him and he comes in. He goes, what do you got? And I show him. I have a page and a half.
Adam,
of
he
different
had an hour's worth of, I mean, this went on for a long time.
Wow.
All right.
So I'm going through there and I'm going through and telling him, okay, now this is, I can segue into this. And I actually already had a blueprint in my brain on how to go from all this shit, right? I'm telling jokes.
He was
going to
film his Showtime special here tonight. Yeah.
I thought that's what I was supposed to do. So he sits there and he has that look on his face. He's like, All right. Okay, so there's a lot of editing and bringing things down. And as you guys probably are aware of, I'm very long in the worded department. I speak, you know, long sentences. And that's one of the hardest things I was doing up here was trying to battle my own instinct to actually explain a concept. For example, right, I had to call my wife because I was laughing so hard because I couldn't do this. Part of the bit was for me to explain that I was a bouncer at a strip club.
Let's role play it.
All
okay.
Right.
So this is from yesterday.
This is a literal conversation
this is what happened. That took place in Frank's house yesterday. Okay. So Frank, you got some material about working at the Rhino, right? Go ahead and give me the setup of when you're a bouncer at the Rhino.
Yeah. So I used to go ahead and work at a strip club, a very popular club called the Spearmint Rhino in Las Vegas. As a bouncer, I worked security, kind of a hosting type of position where didn't really, you know, I wasn't a bouncer per se. I helped guys and get to the table.
Okay, Frank, stop. Okay, so you've been talking for 2 minutes.
Wow.
And you haven't gotten to the joke yet. Cut all that out. Cut all that out. And I just want you to say, I used to be a bouncer at a strip club.
Yeah, that was
worse. Okay, go.
Yeah. So I used to, you know, back in Las Vegas, early on in my career, I worked at the Rhino.
Stop, Frank.
I said
no.
The Rhino.
Just
I was like,
say,
I shortened it out, right?
Drop. Just say, I was a bouncer at a strip club.
All right, so I used to be...
Literally. We did this for 30 minutes.
Wow. I feel like
I'm
watching...
Then I called up
like
my
I'm
wife.
Watching.
I said it right one time. Finally got it where I said... I was a bouncer at a strip club. I go, honey, I finally got it. I was like, it's Las Vegas with the Rhino. I'm like, shit! I said shit, bro. I'm like, fuck.
Wow, that was worse than your Crow Cop fight. Holy shit.
Hey, at least it ended well, right?
Have you guys had any other fighters try what he's done? Is he he's not the first,
Frank
right?
Trigg did it. Frank Trigg did it.
How was that?
Frank Trigg did it. Okay. And
Brendan's good, right?
No, Leslie Smith did it. She did a great job. Dean Thomas did it. You know, and Frank Trigg did well as well. I knew that Frank Mir was going to be good, though, because being a good comedian is being a good problem solver, and the same thing goes with jiu-jitsu. Like, and it's just kind of the same thing with wrestling. If you could figure out a way to make things flow and work and what X goes, you know, and I knew he'd be good at it. He's not one of these guys that just throws caution to the wind, other than your Todd Duffy fight. Which was awesome. I was there. I couldn't believe that. Fucking Dad Bod Mir is fucking... That was awesome.
He talked way too much shit.
By the way, do you guys hope you get hecklers?
No.
I mean, you destroy hecklers.
Oh, yeah, but you too,
honestly.
I would think.
I never hope I get hecklers. I hope I get fun people in the crowd that have a good sport. Like this couple that came. They met 40 years ago.
They're still here?
For my first show.
Oh, wow. They have, okay.
Yeah, they met at a... I'm like, where'd you guys meet? They said at a prison. That's a true story. They were both prison guards and then fuck like jackrabbits.
Wow. Well, so yeah, I don't wish for the heckler, but I do like crowd work. I like to be improvised with the crowd. So.
Yeah, they're still here. They're here from the first. Remember I told you guys Frank Mir was going to be here, and they thought that was one of my jokes.
I think I think they just drank all those beers, and then they couldn't move.
Yeah.
That's impressive.
What happened? Wow. All right, did everybody have a good time tonight? I hope you guys had a good time. All right. I want to let you know You may have noticed this snazzy phone booth fighting t-shirt I'm wearing. We're going to be, Frank and I'll be selling these outside if you'd like one. We take cash and credit cards. We'll be outside taking pictures. You guys want to take some pictures, say hi. As I said, Demetrius rode with me, so he didn't have a choice. He can't leave. He'll have to say hello as well. And anyway, we really appreciate all you guys coming out. We really, really do. So give yourselves a round of applause. And you can say that you were there the night that Frank Mir debuted his stand-up comedy. So you can take that away with you. Want to thank L.A. Comedy Club for having us out here. Matt and Joaquin were awesome to do this. Adam Hunter and MMA Roasted, thank you for letting us do this again.
Thank you.
Man.
I also have MMA Roasted shirts out there if you guys want to get them as well.
Okay, so great. We'll have those out there as well. And we'll do this again, man, if you'd be up for it, Adam.
100%. I get to be fucking... Frank Mir again, and the greatest fighter in the world, and the guy who saved Lamar Odom's life.
Yeah, that guy. We didn't even tell that story. Next time.
And then gorgeous guys. By the way, the OG of MMA broadcasting is Gorgeous George right here. This dude.
MMA Junkie Radio.
Yeah, he's unbelievable. Him and his kid, the Goes, are great people. So
we'll see you guys out front. Please come by and say hi. Let's get a picture. And thanks for coming out, guys. Appreciate it.